Mr. Chairman, do you want to start with the committee substitute?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. We are going to have an amendment instead of a committee substitute. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I move amendment number one.
And I'll object for explanation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is brought to me by one of our colleagues from East Anchorage. And it would include certain co-op dwelling units in the state's transfer on death process. Of course, the state already has transfer on death for single-family homes and condos, but these co-ops are in an interesting position because the co-op owns the actual real estate, and a person buys a share of the association. So the amendment clarifies that that these co-ops would also be, you'd be able to do transfer on death ownership by allowing the use of that transfer on death deed to convey, as you'll see in the amendment, any common interest proper community property. So the goal here is to get all the dwelling units that you can functionally own in the same category. That's what this is meant to do.
Senator Kawasaki, do you have comment on the amendment?
I have no comment and would defer to the will of the committee.
Thank you. Is there discussion on the amendment, Senator Kaufman?
Thank you, Chair. To the maker of the amendment, just seeing this now, it had not had a prior notice of it. Is this written narrowly enough to be sure of what type of ownership in a unit is unit? Is that tied securely in statute to the to real property?
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, this amendment would place the language in Alaska's Common Interest Ownership Act. So that's the what we're defining property for the purposes of. So yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Thank you, Senator Kaufman. Further discussion on the amendment? I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to the amendment? The amendment is adopted. That brings the bill before the committee. Can we have a brief at ease? Call the meeting back to order. There has been some requests to research the amendment, and so the bill will be held for further consideration and will come before the committee at a later time. That brings us to the third item on today's agenda, which is Senate Bill 140, Fire Station Grants. This bill was heard on February 11th. We took public testimony, reviewed the fiscal notes at this time. I invite Senator Stedman to reintroduce Senate Bill 40 to the committee. Senator Stegman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could we have my trusty staff come forward? And she's been helping me with this bill.
Margot
Juntberg.
Please identify yourself and reintroduce the legislation to the committee.
Good morning, Margot Youngberg, staff to Senator Stedman. SB 140 establishes a matching grant program within the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, which would provide funding for up to 50% of the total project cost for the construction or renovation of fire stations. Although it does not currently allocate funds for fire station construction, the bill establishes the Fire Station Grant Fund as a separate fund within the department designed to receive future legislative appropriations.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that, in essence, is the bill. There is no plan on if this legislation becomes effective to fund it this year at all. We have to wait till we have stronger financial times. But also, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to mention that the city of Kodiak just this last weekend opened up a brand new fire station, maybe four stalls worth or what have you. Their old fire station was crumbling, built back in the 60s, and a good piece of the town came out in celebration of a new fire hall because it stands ready to assist the community, all members of the community, regardless of political affiliation or involvement in community functions or not. And it also helps house ambulances and emergency response issues for the community of Kodiak if there happen to be, you know, tidal waves or other earthquakes or other things. So that's just the latest example. And I think, Mr. Chairman, that this has been one of the most popular and successful funding items over the decades that I've been in the legislature, when the legislature's helped communities all across the state build fire halls.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Do we have questions of the prime sponsor? Senator Keel, do we have a motion to adopt a CS?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 140 Finance. That's work order 34 LS0489/I as in Iliamna before the committee and use that as our working document.
And I will object and ask Liz Harpo, staff to Senator Olson of the Senate Finance Committee, to the table to explain the CS to the committee.
Good morning. For the record, Liz Harpold, staff to Senator Olson and the Senate Finance Committee. Very simple change here. We're updating the effective date to July 1st, 2026.
With that, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting the CS? Seeing none, the city CS has been adopted. The will of the committee, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move SGR 140 Finance.
What about Senate Bill 40?
Excuse me.
Yeah, 140.
Yes, Senate Bill 40.
140.
140. That's right. We'll start over here. I'm just new at this, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 140 Finance 34 LSO 489-I. From committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing none, that bill is moved from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. We'll take a brief at ease while finance members sign the report. call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. That brings us to item 4 on the agenda, which is Senate Bill 21, Alaska Work and Safe Programs. This is the first hearing on the bill. I invite Senator Wilkowski to the table, along with his staff, to introduce Senate Bill 21 to the committee. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Wilkowski, State Senator for East Anchorage. I'm joined by Maxine LaBerge in my office. This bill has been around for about 4 years. It hasn't been in front of this committee for some time, but I appreciate you taking this up. This bill would have Alaska join the growing list of states that are currently offering an auto IRA program to help small businesses that don't offer any retirement for their employees. Across the country, over 1 million Americans are now accessing retirement options through a similar type of program. We know that statistically over half of American households have zero retirement savings. In Alaska, it's estimated that 105,000 workers, which is roughly 47% of our workforce, private sector workforce, do not have access to a retirement savings plan through their jobs. We know that the IRS, according to the IRS, the average monthly Social Security payment in January 2026 was a little over $2,000. Cost of living in Alaska's exceeds $5,000. Social Security is nowhere near enough, and we need to find ways to encourage Alaskans to save. We know that 64% of small businesses in Alaska don't offer retirement of any kind, with cost being the biggest reason they do not have an established program. In fact, statistically, 71% of employers that don't offer a retirement program say that they don't because it's too costly. 38% don't offer it because they say it's too complicated. And then another 25% or so say it's too time-consuming. Studies done by, or research done by the AARP show that 70% of these businesses that don't offer retirement would support a savings plan if it were an option. A survey of 121 plans with less than $2 million in assets found that for small businesses to stand up a retirement program, the fees can cost anywhere from $4,800 per year to $17,000 per year. This bill would establish an auto IRA program for Alaskan employers that would not cost employers anything at all to set up these programs. The state would, it would be a public-private partnership. This is something that employees can opt out of if they choose not to participate in the program. Again, according to AARP, 86% of small businesses say we should be doing more to encourage Alaskans, this is Alaskan businesses, to save more. And it cuts all across party lines. 71% of Republicans, 70% of Democrats, 70% of Independents support privately managed saving options to help small businesses offer employees a way to save, just like we're doing with this bill. 17 other states have implemented similar legislation. Six of them are in partnership with with Colorado, which will be on the line also today to explain how their system is set up. And there are bills that are to enact similar types of programs that are moving in Mississippi, where their Senate Finance Committee just recently recommended passage, in Utah, where their House of Representatives just passed a similar version, 71-1, and in Kansas, where their Committee on Financial Institutions and Pensions just introduced a similar bill. This bill would allow Alaska to join other states in their combined efforts to offer a retirement savings option that is low cost to businesses and employees. There's another advantage to doing this, and that is with the Federal Secure Act that just passed. There are opportunities for and incentive programs to help low-income individuals save for retirement via a federal match. We also have another provision in this bill, which I think many Alaskans would love to take advantage of, and that's the opportunity to save their permanent fund dividend check and have a portion of their dividend check transferred into a savings account, again, to encourage Alaskans to save. Mr. Chairman, today we have Dave Young, the Colorado State Treasurer, on the line to answer questions about a potential multi-state partnership, and Marge Stoneking from AARP is here to assist with questions as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have questions from the Finance Committee of the prime sponsor? Seeing none, we will go to invited testimony at this time. Marge Stone King, please come to the table, identify yourself, and proceed with your invited testimony.
Good morning, Chairman Hoffman, members of the committee. My name is Marge Stone King, and I'm privileged to serve as Advocacy Director for AARP Alaska. AARP's vision is a society in which all people live with dignity and purpose. To realize that vision, AARP focuses our work on health, wealth, and self. Wealth, of course, is the most well-recognized of those needs for a retirement with dignity. But the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College reports that 2 in 5 U.S. households are at risk of not being able to sustain their pre-retirement standard of living in retirement. My own generation, Generation X, will be the next generation to retire. And according to the National Institute of Retirement Security's report on Generation X, we are the first generation to rely overwhelmingly on defined contribution plans rather than traditional pensions in the private sector. The typical Gen X household has $40,000 saved for retirement. You combine that with Social Security and you might get through 1 year of retirement. And there are many Gen X households, especially women of people of color, that fall even farther below retirement targets due to unequal access to retirement plans at work, lower career earnings, and caregiving-related career disruptions. Access to retirement plans for Gen X households and subsequent generations is unequal. Workers at large employers are far more likely to be covered, while small business, part-time, and gig workers have limited access to workplace retirement plans. All Alaska workers deserve a chance at a secure retirement. But right now, as you heard, nearly half of Alaska's private sector workers, most of them at small businesses, don't have access to a retirement savings plan on the job. Many small business owners want to provide their employees with a retirement plan, but complex administration and high costs of company plans put that out of reach. Without access to retirement savings at work, nearly all workers fail to save. Only 5% of people will go out on their own, and we've been seeing this for 40 years. Workers are, and so that puts them at risk for poverty and public assistance as they age, and that costs the state. Workers are 15 times more likely to save for retirement when they have access to a payroll deduction savings plan at work, and 20 times more likely to save if they are auto-enrolled in that program, like they would be in this bill. If this access gap is not addressed, the Pew Charitable Trust estimates that Alaska will face $708 million in increased reliance on state-funded public assistance programs like SNAP and Medicaid through 2040. Pew's analysis finds that older Alaska households without adequate retirement savings will face an average income shortfall of $3,840. But if Alaska households saved an average additional $920 a year or just $75 a month, they could erase that projected public assistance burden and improve their own retirement security. These plans are not controversial. As you heard from the senator in the 2023 AARP survey, 7 in 10 small business owners here in Alaska support a privately managed, ready-to-go retirement savings program that helps small businesses offer their employees a way to save for retirement like that proposed in SB 21. And you heard how it runs across. This high support runs across the political spectrum. In that same Alaska Small Business Survey, 59% of business owners are concerned that their employees will not have enough funds in retirement to cover health care or living expenses. And 75% are concerned that some Alaskans could end up on state-funded public assistance programs because they don't have enough or any retirement savings. A 2024 Pew analysis of early adopter states found that the introduction of state-facilitated privately managed auto IRA programs coincided with increases in new private plan formation, suggesting that work and save programs can actually strengthen the overall retirement savings marketplace rather than replace it. SB 21 is a fiscally responsible policy that proposes a public-private partnership already passed in 17 other states to help Alaskan workers save their own money for retirement through automatic payroll deduction while reducing long-term pressure on state-funded programs. I respectfully urge the committee to support SB 21 and move Alaska Work and Save forward so that all Alaska workers can have a chance at a secure retirement. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Stone King. Moving on to additional invited testimony, we move to Colorado State Treasury. Dave Young, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your invited testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure you can hear me.
I can hear you loud and clear.
Very good. Thank you so much. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Dave Young, the Colorado State Treasurer. I'm testifying today to highlight some of the benefits of state-facilitated auto IRA programs similar to what's been proposed in Senate Bill 21. As the chairman of the Colorado Secure Savings Program Oversight Board, I work to ensure Colorado employees have the opportunity to achieve a dignified and sustainable retirement. It is clear from the data management issue this term that Stone King talked about that far too many people lack access to a retirement plan at work, and that accessing a plan at work actually makes it more likely for them to save. In Colorado, our research indicated early on that nearly 1 million workers in the state lacked access to a workplace retirement account. So we set about trying to fix that. We created an environment where small business owners who cannot afford to offer retirement plans otherwise can compete with larger employers, and it also improves worker well-being for everyone. Prior to passing the Secure Savings Program into law, our office conducted an extensive set of studies on the impact of the retirement savings gap. In Colorado, we did a study which I like to call the cost of doing nothing, and determined that over the next 15 years, our tax bill for safety net services would be at least $18 billion. The biggest barriers to employers offering a retirement plan were cost and complexity of administration. The Colorado Secure Savings Program is designed to meet these needs. Our onboarding process takes about 15 minutes. Ongoing administration to employers is about 5 minutes a month, if that, and the program is provided at no cost to employers. It's crucial because business owners are already busy, and this allows the program to be an asset rather than a burden for those small business owners in particular. The proof is in the results. Nationally, savers have accumulated nearly $2 billion in assets in just 6 reporting states. In Colorado alone, nearly 18,000 employers have helped over 100,000 employees save almost $200 million in almost 3 years of operation. Moreover, a private payroll provider, Gusto, which is based here in Colorado, estimated that Colorado saw a 45% increase in private plan adoption correlated to the implementation of Secure Savings Program. That's because we said employers needed to do something. They could use our program and continue use, but they could also go to the private sector and set the program. And I just said, we saw a 45% uptick in private plan adoption as a result of that. We also understood the limitation that some states might encounter in offering an important benefit like this. Access to a multi-state partnership model makes this program more accessible for smaller population states, such as Alaska, allowing for less initial expense and quicker timeline for implementation. We are currently facilitating a multi-state partnership with Maine, Delaware, Vermont, Nevada, and now Minnesota. Our model prioritizes collaboration with the autonomy of the partner states to meet state needs with a proven program structure. So with that, I thank you for your time and consideration, Mr. Chairman. I look forward to any questions you or the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Seeing no questions, that concludes the invited testimony. We have Pam Leary, the Director of Treasury, for also available for questions, and Genevieve Watusik, the Director of the Permanent Fund Division, for questions for the committee. We will now open the public hearing on Senate Bill 21. We will go to Girdwood and hear from Louise Thesis. Ms. Thesis, are you online from Girdwood? If so, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Huffman. I have a 35-year-old son. He gets multiple W-2s every year. He's worked as a cook, a bartender, a retail clerk, a yoga instructor, and he's never had access to a 401k or an IRA. There's only a small percentage of workers actually would go to a brokerage firm and open an IRA. And as we've heard before in previous testimony, there are 105,000 workers, Alaskans, like my son, and we see them in Birdwood. I've been here for 50 years, and I watch them. In the winter, they might be lifties here on the mountain, or they work in the restaurants. Maybe they're fishing guides in the summer, or they work in fishing boats in Seward, or they go up to Denali, or they might do summer construction. And this is going to be a future liability for us. Alaska Work and Save is an opportunity to grant access to a state-facilitated auto enrollment IRA at no cost to the state or employer. It would be portable, and this is the part, from my point of view, that's so important, that each person like my son is going to have an individual account that he could take anywhere. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. These 17 states have already implemented these programs. I'm amazed at Colorado's success. My boomer generation, we turned our labor into retirement capital through payroll deduction and dollar cost averaging. And I'd love to see the younger generations that come through here have the same opportunities. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that testimony. We'll go to Juneau and with the Volunteers of America Association for the Retired Persons, Jane Andrews. Is she in the room or online?
Thank you, Chairman Hoffman and committee members. My name is Jane Andreen. I live in Douglas, and I am a volunteer with AARP. I'm also testifying on based on my own personal experience. I was the director of a nonprofit in Homer, a very poor nonprofit in Homer, throughout the 80s and into the mid-90s. We did not have, nor could we have, any type of retirement plan system in place for our employees. We could only provide health insurance for the employee, not for their dependents and family members. This bill, I think, provides an excellent opportunity for small businesses, small nonprofits, et cetera, to offer this type of option for its employees. I think it does two things that are most important. One is it allows the businesses to provide their employees with this option, and you've heard the reasons why I think that can be beneficial. But I think the other thing it does that hasn't really been touched on is it raises the awareness for the employees of the need to begin planning for their retirement. I don't know that that's something that a lot of people, younger people, think about until they're in the approaching advancing years. I think about my grandmother, Grammy Andreen, back in Minnesota. She had 13 children. When Grandpa died, she was in her 60s. She lived the remaining 20 years of her life on Social Security. She died at 85. She still had her half acre of gardening. But I don't know how many of us could do that. Social Security is, of course, not something we can depend on. So it's really important that people become aware earlier on to start planning for the eventuality of retirement. Thank you for your attention. I appreciate it, and I encourage support for this bill.
Thank you for that testimony. We will move on to Anchorage, where we'll hear from John Whittleton. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Hi, I'm John Whittleton. Thank you. And I run a small business here in Anchorage. We've been around for over 40 years, got roughly 30 employees, so pretty stable. But, you know, I was gone for the last 5 days came back. I got a foot tall stack of paperwork to deal with and checks to sign. We had a theft issue yesterday to deal with, and some staff people moving on and dealing with rehiring some of those positions and rejuggling. So this is not unusual. This is typical small business stuff. And it is really hard to find the time and the money to do something like the Work and Save program offers. And I really want to see this for my employees. It's very simple for me to do. We do deductions for so many things on our payroll anyway. The math is very simple. And to offer to the employees would be a tremendous benefit. And I've got my employees now. I'm really very fortunate because they're in their 30s and their 40s and 50s. And I had one just retire who's in his 60s. So, you know, they're moving into this time where they will be retiring and will need some money saved up. And I believe out of those 30 employees, I've got maybe 4 or 5 who have their own IRA or some kind of 401k retirement plan set up. It's just not something that I've managed to do. And this is like a gift to a business like mine, where we can, you know, just do the deduction, sign them up quickly. And I really appreciate Jane's comment that it raises awareness, because I don't think my people, as they age year after year, that they are really thinking about their retirement, and they should. It'll come crashing home someday. So anyway, support this, obviously, and hope you will, too. Thank you.
Thank you for that testimony. Is there any individuals in the audience that would like to provide testimony on this bill? Is there anybody else online? So that concludes. We will close the public hearing process. At this time, Senator Keel, can you review the fiscal notes?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 21 has drawn 2 fiscal notes, both from the Department of Revenue. Both the Treasury Division and the Permanent Fund Dividend Division give the bill indeterminate fiscal notes. They both say it will create a new fund and they will need to do regulations, but neither says they are able to estimate what those costs or potential revenues might be.
Questions on the fiscal notes? Seeing none, we'll invite the sponsor back to the table to have closing comments before we set this bill aside. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bill Wilkowski, State Senator for East Anchorage. I don't have a whole lot to add other than to say that I think there's clearly a problem there. We have 105,000 Alaskans who work for small businesses who have they have access, they can go out and do it, they're just not doing it. You're hearing from small businesses, there's dozens of support letters in your packet. Small businesses want this. I have not heard a single Alaskan oppose this. I know you have opposition from some of the out-of-state life insurers who want to have these for themselves, who think that people are going to go out somehow and buy annuities. They're just not doing it. It's not going to happen. And here is an opportunity for us with a very, very, very light touch to change the lives and encourage savings for 100,000 Alaskans. I think we should take that opportunity. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. Do members of the committee have comments or questions of the prime sponsor, Senator Kaufman?
Thank you, Chair, for the bill sponsor. If you would, just kind of summarize the mechanics of this. So it's an opt-out system, I understand. And so who it is it the individual or is it the business that is opting in or out? And then just the mechanics of funding it. So is an account created to the extent that you know right now, you know, pending whatever needs to be done in the department? So just kind of the flow of what happens in just a few simple steps. Thank you.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Senator, through the chair. So fundamentally, businesses would be required to offer this, and small businesses, any business that doesn't currently offer a qualified retirement plan, which is predominantly small businesses. Once you get to a certain size, most companies are offering retirement plans. And so the businesses would be required, again, very light touch. It's very, very simple for them to set up. They would fill out some paperwork. They'd be required to go to their employees, get the information from the employees, and just like they would deduct their unemployment insurance or their workers or whatever is deducted, federal taxes, there would be a line on there through their payroll that would deduct for the employee's contribution. The rate that we leave a lot of discretion to the commissioner. And the discretion is how much would be automatically deducted. And we would estimate it would be anywhere from 3 to 5% of the employee's paycheck. It would increase every year at a rate that's determined by the commissioner. Employees at any time can opt out. And this is, I think, key. This is not requiring them to do this. Employees would opt out if they chose. And what you see is statistically anywhere from 75% to 80% of employees actually stay in. And they accumulate their savings over time. If the employee needs it for an emergency, there are provisions where the funds can be withdrawn for an emergency purpose. That's fundamentally how it would work, Senator. I hope I answered your question.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. So it's mandatory. It'll be state law that all employers mandatory that they participate in this. And so the opt-outs are written if you have some other retirement program or is it going to be both?
Senator Wilkowski.
Senator Kaufman through the chair. If the employer offers a retirement program, they do not have to participate in this program. And yes, all employers would be required to participate in this unless they offer a retirement program. That's the way it's currently written. Employees at any time can opt out. And what we've seen in other states is there's a debate over whether it should be opt-in or opt-out for employees. And what you see is statistically when people get in, they tend to stay in. If there's an opt-in, much fewer employees will opt into the program. But there is always the opt-out program. And you can say, I don't want to participate at all. But again, 75 to 80% of employees stay in and opt in.
Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, so the employees can opt out. The employer stays opted in. Are there provisions for matching so that just like you might have in a corporate style or larger business 401k where the employer can choose to contribute?
Senator Wilkowski.
We don't have provisions for matching in this. However, there are under the SECURE Act, which just passed, which goes into effect at the end of this year, the Federal SECURE Act 2.0. There are provisions for matching there. And so, again, through the regulatory process, the hope is that this will there will be a matching component that's set up. And I believe the way the match works with the SECURE Act is the employee claims a credit on their tax return. And so the employee would then receive a credit for what they've contributed, and then the federal government would deposit that money or take it off their taxes. But as currently written, there is no requirement for a match.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman. Senator Stedman.
This has got a couple of clarifiers, Mr. Chairman. So this is mandatory for all employers in the state of Alaska? So for clarity, if you have one employee or five employees or whatever, but...
Senator Wilkowski.
Through the chair, Chair Stedman. That is correct. The way it's set up is we define an employer pursuant to the Workers' Compensation Act, and it excludes independent contractors. I know that there are some states that have some limits, and I would certainly be open to that if that's a concern for the committee. There are some states that set limits at 5 employees or more. Some states do 10 employees or more. And some states also say businesses that have been in business for a period of time. I'd be open to discussion on any of those things. And I think what we were trying to get at was the fact that I believe 73% of businesses that have less than 10 employees don't offer the retirement. So we were really trying to get at the smaller employers because they tend to be the ones that don't offer their retirement packages.
Senator Stedman.
Okay, so this would be, if I interpret it, as a mandatory IRA, basically.
Mandatory in the sense that employers have to, through the chair, mandatory in the sense that employers have to offer this, but employees can opt out at any time. That's correct.
Senator Stedman.
And then just one area we haven't talked about, the investments that goes into an IRA, but that's just a holding mechanism. What is the investment selection, and how is that perceived to be managed?
Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, through the chair. We have pretty broad discretion through the chair on how that would be administered. It's up to the commissioner who is administering the program. What I would recommend and what I think for Alaska, because we're such a small state, is to join with one of the other states, probably Colorado, which has six or seven other states that are participating. And the Colorado would manage the program just like they do for six other states. There's a menu of investment options, just like you have with your SBS, or just like employees have with some other retirement options. And there could be things like an S&P 500. There could be target funds. There could be a bond fund. It would be privately managed. This is not government. This is not government managed per se. But it would probably. I would recommend be administered through another state like Colorado, just because we're too small, and it would greatly, greatly save us a lot of money.
Senator Stedman.
And then the record keeping. Who's legally responsible for record keeping? We've had, and the reason I ask that, Mr. Chairman, we had problems historically in our retirement program where we had difficulty with record keeping amongst our communities, non-state employers across the state. So there's questions on who's responsible for record keeping and the liability there. And then on the employer side, some employers don't submit the employee side of, or the employer side of Social Security, or even sometimes the Social Security withholdings for their employee. How is that perceived to be dealt with if an employer decides that they're going to off-scound with the money?
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to turn over that little technical question to my staff, Maxine.
Through the chair, Maxine LaVerge, staff to Senator Wilkowski. In this bill, we give the commissioner or their designee the authority to administer the program and keep records. So it would be up to them to decide how those records are kept.
Senator Stedman.
What? We might want to have them get back to us on the question of who has responsibility for accurate record keeping in the event that the records get messed up. We know it's overseen by the Commissioner of Revenue, but I guess the fundamental part is the state then legally responsible for all these retirement accounts like they are with our current non-state employers? There's some responsibility that we have within our retirement system, not in that. And is much more expansive than just direct state employees. So just some clarity on that would be good, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Further questions for the prime sponsor, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess in terms of administration, you referred to maybe pooling up with Colorado, and I don't know how they run their system. I think of some models, right? Senator Stedman referred to SBS where the state contracts to a private company. There's a board and administrator that has had to watch them like hawks and yank their chain over and over again. The Alaska 529 plan is a different private company. I've never heard a complaint. So I know we've got that. I think the state of Utah does their 529 plan in-house, as does, I'm forgetting which other state, and one of them, Utah is one of the best rated for cost and performance in the country, and the other one is one of the worst. So can you help us understand who you see actually doing the administration of these accounts and the investment options and what that model looks like? Is your bill, where's the bill point?
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Senator, through the chair. We leave a lot of discretion to the administrator, which is the commissioner, on this. And when we originally started the bill, we started out having a board, having a group of people who would oversee this program. And again, trying to keep the costs as low as possible, we changed from that and went to having it administered by the commissioner. If the committee thinks it's a better policy call to go and spend a little more money to do that, we'd certainly be open to that discussion. In terms of how it's done, there's a variety of ways it can be done. It could be done totally in-house. It could be done, I think when we originally proposed this and had started having conversations years ago, our thought was, well, let's just have the permanent fund administer it. They said they weren't interested in doing that. and I understand that. They have their core competence in what they do, and they just didn't want to go out and do that. And we thought the permanent fund would be great. They're very good at what they do. They politely declined. So our thought is there are other states that are doing this, and there are other states that are doing it very well. And I know Colorado's one that does it for six states, as I mentioned. The commissioner could certainly go that route. I believe Treasurer Young is online to answer questions about how Colorado administers their plan and how they work with other states to do that. I believe he's still online. But we leave quite a bit of discretion to the administrator, which is the commissioner, on how to decide how this is administered, and then what type of funds would be offered, how exactly the whole technical process is done.
Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, would be all right to ask the Colorado Treasurer for just a little more on the nuts and bolts of how they run that?
Mr. Young, are you still online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm still on. Thanks so much. I think what I'm being asked to describe is the nuts and bolts of how this is administered. We've worked pretty hard to separate this program from the operations of the Treasury and the rest of the state. So this is a public-private partnership. Again, I mentioned that I am chair of an oversight board. The other eight members of the board are appointed by the governor, and it's our job to oversee the operations. But part of that was hiring staff, but a large amount of that is actually doing very transparent and open RFP processes to select private vendors to fill key roles. One that is very important, it's been highlighted, is the record keeper. And so we went through a process of accepting bids and selected Bestwell as our record keeper. And so they actually are the record keeper for all of the partner states in our partnership, which is called the Partnership for Dignified Retirement. And so they are the ones that actually receive the funds through payroll deductions. They don't go into the state coffers. We go into individual accounts and accurately track by Bestwell through their record keeping processes. Then the funds are invested, and we went through a process of putting up bids. And we have two fund managers, State Street, BlackRock, that do a variety of different investments. But we really wanted to keep the lineup pretty simple. So what we have is essentially default options at 5% into a target date fund. But, you know, the employee manages their account. They can decide to change that into other investment options. So we keep our lineup simple, but if they want to make some changes, they can do that. They can choose to lower the amount they're deducting from payroll, or they can increase that. There's an auto-adjust every year. But, again, Vestal tracks all that money coming from payroll deduction into individual accounts, and I think it was well made the fact that this is a portable account. So it travels with the employee, doesn't get locked up at a business, and the kind of the payment going to rollover is not an issue. I don't know if I'm addressing all the issues or questions that the committee may have had, so I'll stop here and see if there's more I can provide.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Treasurer, that's very helpful, a public-private partnership, the funds separate from the Treasury. That's useful to have those pieces. The one other question, there was a reference to it earlier, but I'd like to ask, what are the administrative and record-keeping fees to a plan participant? Not necessarily the underlying fees in your investment options, but what's it cost a plan participant to be in the plan?
Mr. Young.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. And I will have the director give you the specifics on that, but we have a dollar base fee as well as a basis point fee that goes together for the fees to the savers. One of the reasons why we actually preferred to go with a partnership is that we wrote our contracts with our record keeper and the fund manager breakpoints in price for management. The more assets under management, the lower the fees become. And so it not only helps these other state partnerships with lower fees, but it helps our own savers in Colorado as we get those breakpoints. And I think it's coming up now in partnership. We're about to hit a breakpoint because of the success of the program and the amount of, as I mentioned, we're approaching $200 million in assets. And so, you know, I will get you the specifics, get the senator, Kowski, the, I hope I said that name right, apologize, Senator, if I didn't. I'll get those specific fees because they are in flux at this moment because we're approaching that breakpoint.
Thank you. Okay. We will be holding this bill if for further review, Senator Stedman.
So when we look at our different retirement systems, excuse me, around the state, there's been a lot of concern or points issued when we look at our supplemental benefit system where you select your own investments or your deferred compensation where you select it, or your defined contribution plan where you individually direct your selections. Some people have testified that it is puts them at a disadvantage to have them selecting their own investments because they're not equipped for it and it should be done through some other vehicle. One of the questions I have concerning a program like this is the, you know, how is the structure going to be to help the employee with their mandatory contribution? Folks, Mr. Chairman, have difficulty understanding or have never paid attention to the difference between a money market and an index S&P 500 fund, as an example, or even an aggressive growth fund, the risk level of that versus a short-term bond fund. So I have a question on that. How does the bill sponsor plan on perceive that's being dealt with? And then does this include also, would the employee be able to select a Roth IRA versus a traditional IRA, one being tax deductible, one being taxed on the outflow?
Senator Wilkowski.
I'll ask my staff to respond.
Through the chair, Maxine LaBerge, staff to Senator Wilkowski. Thank you for that question, Senator Stedman. This program in
Please the... Please identify yourself for the record.
Maxine LaBerge.
Okay, thanks.
Maxine LaBerge. So in this bill, we give the commissioner or their designee the power to set up this program. And as we know, we've been speaking to Colorado about their partnership. When an employee joins this auto IRA program through the Colorado Partnership for a Dignified Retirement, if they do not make a selection within the first 30 days, they will automatically be put into a target date retirement fund. That can be changed at any time. So employees might get started on that and then decide later down the road that they want to change what they are investing in. I think what you're bringing up is a good point that a lot of people are not really sure what they are invested in, and they go with the automatic selections. And the purpose of this bill really is to bring saving for retirement to light and bring this to the attention of people in Alaska who do not have the ability to save at all right now, but also how we can be ensuring that Alaskans are saving efficiently for a dignified retirement.
Senator Stedman.
Just the Roth versus the traditional.
Yes, through the chair, Maxine LaBerge. The Colorado program is a Roth IRA. If we did not want to be part of that, the commissioner has the authority to make a different decision.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, Chair, for the bill sponsor or Ms. LaBerge. Would an employer, if you have an individual who, let's just say, has a fix-it business, they're a handy man or a handy woman running around doing work, would they be in the population of who would be, as an employer of one, required? Or is there an opt-out or any consideration of an individual that's basically doing gig work from different sources?
Senator Rulikowski.
Thank you, Senator, through the chair. As the bill is currently written, it applies to all employees other than employees who are independent contractors. And that's the way we set it pursuant to the workers' compensation definition of what an independent contractor is. And again, the employee would have the opportunity to opt out if they chose to opt out in that situation.
Senator Kaufman.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no additional questions, Senator Stedman.
Just for a quick comment, right? I think the concept is a pretty good concept, and helping people to retire is a good concept. I'm not so sure that we shouldn't consider some kind of a softer entry, or it's not mandatory, and there's some low employee hurdle rate, if it's 5 or 7 or 10 or some number, to try to get something up and running, get the bugs worked out. Making it mandatory across the state, from my perspective, is a little challenging and problematic, but the concept of trying to set up a structure where people can save for retirement is certainly a good intention. How aggressive we move forward. So I'd be a little cautious with.
Thank you, Senator Rutkowski. Closing comments?
Yeah, thank you. Response? And thank you, Senator, through the chair. We did start out fairly aggressive in this, making it apply to all employees, and happy to work with the committee to take a little softer touch. Our goal, again, is to just have this apply and have this opportunity available for all employers and employees, but happy to work with the committee to come up with something that is more palatable.
Thank you. Excellent questions. We will be setting this bill aside for further consideration. Members can work with the prime sponsor on concepts, any amendments. So that concludes our hearing on Senate Bill 21. The last item on our agenda is Senate Bill 211, the extension of the Occupational License Board. This is the first hearing on the bill. I invite Senator Bjorkman to the table along with his staff to introduce the legislation to the committee. Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Senator Jesse Bjorkman, and I represent the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula. It is my esteemed pleasure to be here with all of you today. Senate Bill 211 extends the sunset dates of 6 state professional boards. These boards include professional counselors, marital and family therapy, psychologists, psychological associate examiners, the Real Estate Commission, certified real estate appraisers, and social work examiners. Senate Bill 211 follows the extension recommendations given by the state's auditor for each of these boards. Present with us today is our state legislative auditor, Chris Curtis. Online for questions is the Director of Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licenses, Sylvan Robb, as well as representatives from each of the audited boards.
Thank you for that introduction. Do members of the committee have questions of the prime sponsor? Seeing none, we will go to invited testimony and invite our legislative auditor to the table for invited testimony. Chris Curtis, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Good morning. I'm Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. A Division of Legislative Audit did conduct sunset audits of all the 6 boards that are being extended by SB 211. I believe you have copies of the audit reports in your meeting packets. I'm going to be going through the audit reports at fairly high level. I'm spending more time on those boards that are having shorter extensions and less time on those with longer extensions. I'm going to start off with the Board of Marital and Family Therapy. We're recommending a full 8-year extension for this board. Their schedule of revenues and expenditures show a healthy surplus. The audit found the board amended its regulations as needed and generally licensed marital and family therapists in accordance with state law. We have two recommendations. First, to Office of the Governor, Boards and Commissions Director, to work with the board to identify interested applicants to fill board seats in a timely manner. And second, to the board chair, to ensure renewal licensing applications are sufficient to monitor compliance with teletherapy-related continuing education. We think that's an easy administrative fix, and again, we're recommending the full 8-year extension. If there's no questions, I'll move on to the Board of Social Work Examiners.
Please proceed.
We again recommend an 8-year extension. The board's schedule of revenues and expenditures did show a surplus. The audit report reported that the board actively amended regulations and licenses were issued in compliance with state law, except for licensees that renewed via the online portal, and those lack documentations. We do have two recommendations. First, we recommend the Office of the Governor, Boards and Commissions Director, again, take steps to fill board seats in a timely manner. And second, to the board chair and the DCBPL director to work together to ensure renewal applicants comply with continuing education regulations or amend the regulations as deemed necessary. Again, recommend an 8-year extension. And if there's no questions, I'll move on to the next board, which is the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers. So we're recommending a 6-year extension for this board. This board's schedule of revenues and expenditures also showed a surplus. We found the board was actively amending their regulations and effectively licensing real estate appraisers and real estate management companies. The main audit findings were that one board position had been vacant for 56 months. Statute changes may be necessary to address federal oversight findings, and investigations were not completed in a timely manner. If you turn to page 8, which I guess you do not have copies of the report, so I'll just paraphrase it. We found this board is subject to federal oversight by the appraisal subcommittee. The federal appraisal subcommittee is responsible for reviewing all states' appraisal regulation programs at least every 2 years. The audit found that the 2024 review of this board found some findings whereby statutory changes are necessary in order to address the findings. The board chair stated that curative legislation addressing the findings have not been introduced because the board has been unable to find a legislative sponsor. We have three recommendations. We recommend Office of the Governor, Boards and Commissions Director continue to work with the board to identify potential applicants to fill board seats in a timely manner. Second, the board should continue to seek a statutory change to address the federal oversight findings. And then lastly, the commissioner should work with policymakers to improve the recruitment and retention of investigators. And if there's no questions, I'll move on to the Board of Professional Counselors. We're recommending a 6-year extension for this board. We found that the board actively amended their regulations, effectively licensed professional counselors. We also found that one board position had been vacant for an extended period, and the board fees were not sufficient to cover costs of regulating the profession. We found that there is a new fee approval process that's mandated by the governor's chief of staff. In a memo that you can find in the appendix to the audit report, there's a subject line that reads, "No tax fee revenue increases without chief of staff approval." And via this memo, the governor's chief of staff declared that new or increased taxes, fees, revenues, or any other mechanism to collect new or additional revenue must be approved by the chief of staff with input from OMB prior to the request being made. So in accordance with this new policy, OMB established procedures whereby if a department wanted to seek a fee increase, they would submit their request to their respective Division of Administrative Services, who would then forward it on to OMB. OMB then would review it and determine whether it was warranted to forward it on to the governor's chief of staff for further review and approval. So we found that the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing Management, they did a fee analysis. They found that there should be a fee increase. They submitted that fee increase request to the board, who supported the fee increase. They did submit that fee increase request to their Division of Administrative Services, but due to staff turnover, the request was never forwarded on to OMB. Therefore, the fees were never increased. The board had a deficit of $210,000 as of January 2025, and we expect the deficit to increase. So in summary, requiring two additional levels of approval for an increase that is statutorily mandated will, at a minimum, slow down the fee increases, which will increase the deficits of the boards. That results in pushing the fee operational cost to future licensees, or it can lead to an agency coming to the legislature and asking for general funds to cover board deficits. We have two recommendations. First, we recommend Office of the Governor, Boards and Commissions Director, take steps to ensure board seats are filled in a timely manner. And then second, we recommend the Division of Admin Services for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development establish written procedures to ensure fee requests are forwarded to OMB timely. If there's no questions, I'll move on to the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associate Examiners. We're recommending a five-year extension for this board. The board effectively amended their regulations and generally issued new licenses in accordance with statutes and regulations. But we did find some areas for improvements, and we do have five recommendations. Board fees were not sufficient to cover the cost of regulating the profession. DCBPL did a fee analysis that supported increasing fees, but they did not submit that to the board for their review, and they determined not to submit the request to their Division of Admin Services because they believed there would be a backlog in fee approvals with this new approval process, and they wanted to prioritize the fee increases for other types of fees, such as for new license types. On January 2025, this board had a deficit of $90,000, and we expected it to grow. Five findings and recommendations. First, again, to the governor's Office of Boards and Commissions Director to work with the board, identify interested applicants to fill seats in a timely manner. Second, for the board chair and DCBPL director to work together to ensure renewal applicants comply with regulations, continuing education regulations, or seek a regulation change if they determine necessary. Third, board members should review investigative cases in a timely manner. Fourth, DCBPL directors should ensure courtesy licensees comply with monthly reporting requirements. And lastly, for the director to ensure the board fees are sufficient to cover the cost of regulating the profession. And if there's no questions, we can move on to the last board, which is the Real Estate Commission. We are recommending a four-year extension for the Real Estate Commission, that is half of the eight-year maximum. We did find the board was actively amending their regulations and effectively licensing real estate appraisals, real estate professionals, but we did find areas for improvements and, again, have five recommendations. Recommendations, first, we recommend that director provide training and update written procedures to ensure committee minutes are maintained for all commission meetings. We found that they weren't being done for committee meetings. Second, the commission chair should update their regulations and forms to include independent contractors. The real estate industry has moved away from employment relationships, and licensees are typically independent contractors affiliated with brokerages. Now, statutes were amended back in 1998 to recognize this new independent contractor dynamic, but the commission never updated its regulations or forms to recognize independent contractors. Rec 3, the commissioner should work with policymakers to improve the recruitment and retention of investigators, and DCBPL management should help identify ways to work with the board or the commission to address its backlog. We found extensive delays in their investigations and that their backlog of investigations had doubled. Rec 4, on page 19, the commission should consider seeking legislation to eliminate the Real Estate Recovery Fund. The Real Estate Recovery Fund was created many years ago for the purpose of providing a remedy for losses suffered in a real estate transactions as a result of fraud, intentional tort, deceit, etc. But in 2018, a law was passed to require licensees to obtain errors and omissions insurance. And since that new law passed back in 2018 through January 2025, there was only about $50,000 in claims paid out of this fund. But during that time, there was $640,000 in fees collected from their licensees for the Real Estate Recovery Fund. During our audit period, which spanned 3.5 years, there was virtually no claims paid out of the fund. So in other words, the fund has outlived its usefulness and we're recommending that it be eliminated. And then Rec 5, the commission should require renewal applicants to submit a certificate of errors and omissions insurance coverage, which is a statutory requirement. Happy to answer any questions.
Any members have questions? I would like to have Ms. Curtis work with my office specifically on the board fees and making sure that we have responses by the administration on those board fees. We don't want these boards to operate in the red and work with the third floor to ensure that those recommendations are responded to by the third floor. Regarding all the other recommendations, we should be looking to work with the prime sponsor to see if all of those are addressed adequately, and we should do this before we can continue to have this bill brought before the committee in the future. Further questions of Ms. Curtis? Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Senator Bjorkman. First of all, I'd like to thank you for taking the responsibility to for the extension of all of these boards. It is a very large task, and we look forward to working with you to make sure that the recommendations of our auditor are adequately addressed. Do you have further comment?
Thank you, Chair Hoffman and members of the esteemed Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Jesse Bjorkman. I represent the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula. Thank you for your attention to the issue of these fees. The fee deltas and discrepancies in the ability for the fees to cover board costs was a significant topic of conversation in the Labor and Commerce Committee when these bills were heard. So we appreciate the chairman's support and efforts toward truing up fee costs so that folks that are in the profession currently will be responsible for executing and paying for their own professional service administration during that time. So we appreciate your support there. The other recommendations for statutory changes within the audit before you, I've had conversations with legislators on those issues and will continue to do so. If any legislators are interested in taking up legislation to remedy issues brought forward in these audits, I'm happy to hear those bills as soon as possible in the Labor and Commerce Committee. There are many, many avenues, as you know, Senator Hoffman, by which we can do that and make that happen in a timely way. So I appreciate the committee's support for these audits. It would be great if other legislators wanted to take on audits, but as these board extensions kind of sail off down the calendar and no one picks them up, I clearly understand, as well as many of my colleagues do too, the value that all of these volunteer boards have to the state of Alaska. And the volunteers that offer their time and talents and energy to participate in regulating their own profession saves our state quite a bit of money and also offers subject matter expertise in the regulations that make these professions work well and in a way that protects consumers across Alaska. So I appreciate your attention to this bill.
Thank you. If there are individual senators that want to work with Senator Bjorkman in my office, please do so. It is work that needs to be done. There's a lot of time and energy going into the audits and the recommendations for the services that they perform to all of our citizens. Questions of the sponsor? Seeing none. That concludes our work on this bill. I think we have fiscal notes at this time. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 211 has one fiscal note from the Department of Commerce, Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. It shows ongoing costs of board member travel and board support. Status quo as reflected in the governor's 2027 budget request of 124.4, so $124,400 from this year through FY32, and you'll notice that number drops down because one of the boards in the bill has a shorter sunset extension. All of that is receipt-supported services and reflects the status quo.
Questions on the fiscal note? Seeing none, we will open the public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on Senate Bill 211, the extension of occupational licensing boards? Do you have anyone online? We don't have anyone online. We will close the public testimony on Senate Bill 211, and we will set this bill aside. That concludes the meeting, this meeting. Our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, Wednesday, 9 a.m. We'll be hearing the 2025 statewide study report update. Seeing nothing else to come before the committee, we are adjourned.